You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Alright, so that's that. And then, did you listen to the Toxic Avenger?
I did not listen to it yet.
Oh, okay. I added the,
Oh, wait. Did I?
Well,
yes, I did. Yes, I did. Because I remember hearing the bumpers and
The trailer?
And the inserts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I watched the first 20 minutes of that, so I almost think we need to do a revisit episode like we did with where you talked about Short Circuit. I think we need to do the same thing with Toxic Avenger.
How did you watch Toxic Avenger? Where'd you find it?
If you do a Google search, you'd find it on YouTube. The full movie's on YouTube for free.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
So I watched, I'd say about 20 minutes. So, I guess that's telling, as far as a review goes.
Yeah,
that's probably a conversation for another time.
Okay.
All right. So let's get this party rolling.
Right on.
Let's see. Recording call. Got it. Are you doing the hosting or am I?
Oh, you can.
Okay. You know, after doing the editing for Fight Club, I almost feel like I need to do the 3-2-1 thing. 3-2-1.
This is 70-something podcast.
Evel Knievel sold separately or with the Evel Knievel stunt cycle from Ideal.
Use the force, Luke.
Hey, this is Banzai Retro Club. We just want to welcome you, the listener, to our Retro Club, and we appreciate you checking us out. Hopefully you'll enjoy what we have to offer today, and that is one of our infamous, not, you know, more than famous, but infamous, you know, as we learned from the Three Amigos, is we're going to be talking about our time capsule for 1977. And usually what this means is that me and co-host Scott, who's online, hey, say hi, Scott.
Hello.
Usually what we'll do is we'll go through and talk about like news headlines, things that happened for the specific year, you know, the top movies, the top music that was going on. There's a lot of things that we unearthed with our Google searches looking for 1977 that we're kind of aching to really talk about. There's just, as far as the technology that came out in 1977, I'm very excited to talk about because that was my world back then, specifically in the 80s. So I enjoyed kind of what came out in 77, being the Atari and being the Apple II computer. I had my 2E. So 77 was kind of the birth year for a lot of great stuff. So this is right in our wheelhouse. This is what we love to talk about. I know, Scott, when you and I started messaging back and forth about this, you picked up on something else about 77 that I didn't pick up right away. And you were talking about the death of Elvis.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't even remember that as that happening that year until I was like looking on that webpage, but you picked up on it like immediately. So
I don't know why that has always stuck in my head. Like, I was never like a big Elvis fan, but I just remember it was in for some reason it's burned into my head that Elvis died in 1977. I don't know why, where it came from.
Yeah, and I remember when it happened. I remember it being huge, and I just didn't. I'm the kind of guy that I don't remember like the death year of people. I try to just remember like birthdays, because I'd rather kind of remember the life of somebody versus the death of somebody. So I would never remember a death year, but it was just weird that, you know, when we started talking about it, that you were like, oh yeah, 77, you know, Elvis. And I was like, oh, okay. But I mean, that was such a significant event for 77. So I get why it would be blazoned in people's heads, because mm-hmm. That was huge. You know, I mean, what a megastar Elvis was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very impacting death. I mean, and I know that through our, you know, through the recent years, we've experienced that with like the death of Burt Reynolds, the death of Stan Lee.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have those kind of same things going on. And even more recently, Peter Mayhew, for those Chewbacca fans. Right.
Yeah.
Sure, it's not as huge of a name as Elvis, but still, you know, it's impactful for us because that was what we had going on in our youth. And I know our parents probably were, you know, besides themselves, crying at the death of Elvis.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people were. I remember my aunt was pretty upset because she was a fan, you know.
Yeah.
And she was a little bit, and she's the generation before us that was into that type of music. Like, you know, I don't know how his career would have gone if he had continued working, or if he, you know, if he hadn't passed and still did some stuff. I don't know how long his career would have lasted, but, you know, being born in 68 and only being 9 years old when that happened, you know, it doesn't impact the kids as much as it does the adults. But anyway, so I just remember her being like, I don't remember her crying over it, but I just remember she just seemed really sad because it was such he was such an iconic artist at the time.
Right.
Like Chrissy was really like taken back by George Michael a couple years ago.
Sure.
Passing, you know, because it was kind of out of nowhere and Elvis was only 42 years old when he died.
Yeah, and you can apply the same thing to like Prince.
Yeah, Prince too.
Yeah.
Prince, George Michael, even Luke Perry. I mean, that was kind of a shocker, you know. I mean, not nearly as you know, impactful on pop culture. I mean, 90210, yes, whatever, but not like an Elvis or a Michael Jackson passing at an early age or Prince. So
For me, the one that I probably relate the most to is probably Stan Lee. Associating it, I mean, I realize Stan is no Elvis, but if you were to look at the breadth of what he contributed to pop culture,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, you go into, what was it, Endgame that actually did it? I don't remember, but one of them had at the beginning the, versus the regular Marvel place cards, they had like a whole bunch of scenes of Stan. So it was like in memory of Stan. And it was kind of like, my God, you know, we lost somebody so significant. So in some way I felt that, you know, felt like what that was like to lose somebody like an Elvis,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my life. You know, that was impacting mm-hmm. to me.
Right.
So I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
So some big movies that came out in 77. We had Star Wars, Smokey and the Bandit, Saturday Night Fever.
There's way more than that. Like those are just like the top the top ones.
Right.
But I was looking through that list. I went through about 200 on IMDb.
Okay.
That were released from January to you know, beginning of January to end of December. And I go into the list and there is so many great movies on this list. One that we've talked about, not reviewed, but I've mentioned it a few times. Kentucky Fried Movie was 77. Okay. The Gauntlet with Clint Eastwood was a great movie. The Rescuers, the first Rescuers, not the one down under.
Okay.
Pete's Dragon, dude.
Oh my God. Pete's Dragon was 77?
Yes.
Oh, sweet.
Isn't that awesome?
That is a
Let's see. There was more. Hold on. Let me get to, oh, Capricorn 1. That was a really good one, but it actually technically didn't come out in the U.S. until 78. So it's kind of, it's on the list, but I'm not sure.
Now, how come we haven't spoke about it? We haven't done anything about Smokey and the Bandit.
Well, we kind of covered it with Burt Reynolds.
Right.
With our tribute to Burt Reynolds. I mean, we touched on it some, but we didn't take a deep look at the movie.
I think we need to.
Yeah, we could. It's a great movie. Airport 77 was, I remember this one. It was a 747 crashes into the water and it's like trapped under 100 feet of water. So all the people in it are trapped for, you know, underwater. It was a good one. Good, what they call those, just disaster movies. They were really prominent in the 70s, like Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno and all that stuff. But Airport 77 jumped out at me. Let's see. Death Game. That was, I can't remember much about it, but that was one. I remember the name. Let's see. Oh, Bad News Bears Breaking Training. Candle Shoe. Jodie Foster. Oh, God. Oh, God. George Burns.
Oh, yeah. George Burns. John Denver. Yeah. Terry mm-hmm. Garr was in that one, too.
Oh, yeah. A young Terry Garr. What else? I saw a few more. There's a lot of really good ones, though. Anyway.
Yeah, I was trying to see if there's anything else that, like, kind of, like, jumped out at me. I'm trying to remember the year it was released, and I probably... Do you remember a movie called My Bodyguard?
Oh, absolutely. I think that was like 79.
Oh, really? 80. Okay. I was hoping it was this year.
Yeah, that was...
1980, actually.
80, yeah. Yeah, okay. That was... That's a great one. With one of the Baldwins. Which one was it?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which
Baldwin it was. But that was an... I love that movie. And Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
Moody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 77. Annie Hall, which I've never seen, but has always been popular. excuse me. Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger. Have you ever seen this?
I have not.
Oh, it's a great one. I love those Sinbad movies. There's a whole series of them. They always had a lot of claymation stuff that they must have done green screen with, like stop action or stop. What's it called? Stop action filming. You know, the claymation where they move it a little bit and then they take a picture and they move it a little bit and they take a picture. It's great stuff. It's fun. Which one is it? Oh, The Spy Who Loved Me also was out. Slapshot. So there's really a lot of good movies in 1977.
And actually, of course, one that didn't make that list that you're running through. Mm-hmm. If you are a J.R.R. Tolkien fan, The Hobbit, they had a cartoon that was like a full movie released in 77.
I remember that very well.
Yeah, and so that was Rankin Bass.
I didn't know it made. I didn't see it on the list.
Yeah. And I didn't think it showed up on that list, but I seem to remember that being in one of the links that I sent you about, like, trivia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I've got to mention that. Because I remember that, you know, I was big into fantasy, Dungeons and Dragons, maybe not so much in 77, but that was kind of the, I had the seeds planted, and I was a big fan of The Hobbit. And I remember that I had read the book, loved it so much that for a book report for one of my English classes, I want to say it was ninth grade English class, that I had this full display board like you do, for like science type kind of things. And I had like a map of Middle Earth and all that. And so I was standing up in front of the class doing a presentation about the Hobbit. And I just remember being so jazzed about it. And of course, everyone else was kind of like, all right, this guy's a geek nerd. But, to me, it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I'm trying to sell it to a bunch of people that don't give a damn, of course. But my teacher loved it. She actually loved how excited I was about, this fantasy novel. The cartoon, I remember the cartoon came out and I was just like all in. I was like, yes, this is what I wanted. This is what was missing from the world. Even though it's not like one of the top 10 movies, obviously, but it was released that year and it was a big deal for me.
And I just always remember the part in the cartoon, because I never really read the book, so I'll admit I never was much of a reader. Except for Stephen King for a while and some Star Wars books. But anyway, I remember in the cartoon that I was looking forward to this part in the actual series that Peter Jackson did, just recently. When the elves and the dwarves all came together, and they all came together to fight together, they all joined forces. I always thought that was really cool, that even though these two species or whatever they were, races, whatever you want to call them,
right,
were always kind of at each other,
right,
as kind of enemies, they knew that they had to come together to fight the true evil of
Smog.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So it it was kind of cool. And the humans, of course, too. Right. Humans, elves, and dwarves, right?
Yeah.
So I just always remember that being a cool concept and scene of the cartoon.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to live in a hobbit hole.
in the Shire?
Yeah.
The Shire is a beautiful place, according to the recent movies.
Yeah, Peter Jackson. Yeah, really made it look really great.
Yeah.
All right, so movies. I know that we've definitely spent a lot of time on A New Hope.
Yeah, we don't need to cover that at all.
Yeah. And Saturday Night Fever, I feel like we talked a lot about that recently with, we were talking about music. That was released back then. I remember the soundtrack being very significant and for Rose. I feel like we've kind of really given that a lot of attention, which is great, as it should be. Let's see. Is there anything else as far as movies go that we need to cover? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I mean, just touching on the main ones, briefly. Is all we really need, because we have a lot of other things to cover too.
Yeah. Let's see what happened in 77. Did you look at that one link and did you see any news headlines that stood out to you?
Well, just now, the one that you, one of the links that you sent that was said 1977 history trivia.
Yeah.
I was scrolling really quick. It says Han Solo shot Greedo first and Star Wars deal with it.
Yeah, I love that, by the way.
Oh, that's hysterical, man. Yeah, there's I don't know, there's not too many other things other than Elvis dying. That was the one headline that caught that I remember.
Yeah, I think, there's probably a lot going on as far as actual news stuff, but I was all of 6 years old, so I don't think a lot of it would have hit my, young radar. Other than, I remember Elvis, obviously, but, you know, I'm kind of scrolling through, and really the technology stuff is the stuff that I relate to, because it was technology that I didn't pick up in 77, but I picked up in the early 80s. But, you know, it was released this, you know, in the year of 77, and I think that's, you know, huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent hours upon hours on that damn Atari, you know, playing Pitfall. You know, we talked about the Empire Strikes Back game. I mean, I even remember playing that hideous E.T. game. So, I mean, the Atari was the bomb, and this was its birth year.
That blows my mind.
Because, I mean, we really – did you have it back in 77 or
– I don't think we did. I don't think we got it till like 80 maybe.
Did you have the 2600? I thought you had – did you have the Intellivision?
Well, I had Intellivision too.
Okay. Oh, you had both. Okay.
And I think my friend had ColecoVision.
Okay. So you kind of had all the bases covered on that one.
Yeah, we definitely got our fair share of playing different games. But I don't remember it being when I was 9. You know, because in 77, that's how old I was.
Right.
And I just don't remember going back. I thought I was more like 11 or 12 when I started getting the video game stuff going.
So the 2600, so the Atari, what was the game that was your jam? What was the one that you always played?
I liked Asteroids.
Asteroids.
Asteroids was fun, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but then, I mean, as a year or two went on before any new consoles came out, the Empire Strikes Back one, like we talked about, was one of my favorites too. That was great. And I always liked one that was really simple, Barnstorming.
Barnstorming. I don't remember that one.
Yeah. It was, you had to fly this like a plane. It was similar in play, you know, it was side to side screen. So you started on the left side of the screen, and you never really moved forward. You can move forward and back a little bit, but you always were traveling to the right. Okay.
Okay.
And you had to go through barns, and the more barns you went through, like you had to go up and over trees or fences or something, and then you'd have to dive down and go through the barn. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Actually, I'm looking at a graphic of it. You're pretty accurate with the description. It looks like there's like antennas that you have to fly over, and there's birds you have to avoid.
Yes.
Right. And then you look like you'd have to fly down into the barn. I don't remember playing this, but it looks like that's exactly what the, you know, the 2600 console kind of really led to, was the graphics that you're describing.
Yeah. This is it, yeah. Yeah, I had to fly over windmills, or, yeah.
Right.
Not windmills, yeah, windmills or wind vanes and...
Weather vanes.
And you had, yeah, weather vanes, thank right. you. And it just, it was a fun game. Very simple, but challenging, you know, and as it went on, it got a little harder, so.
I would assume that over, you know, the course of the play, it would go faster.
I think the space between obstacles became shorter.
Okay.
So like that, like the what you call it? Vane? What?
Weather vane.
Weather vane. The tall one, there's I see an image with a tall black one, and it's got, oh, maybe that is a windmill. It's supposed to be like a windmill, I guess. I mean, graphics weren't outstanding back then. But like between that, you'd be way up high on the screen, and you'd have to come all the way back down low to go through the barn. And those distances became shorter, and then there were more birds that would come and get in your way, and you'd have to go between the birds and stuff.
Yeah, I never played this.
Wow. Yeah. I really actually, it's a good game. Fun.
Yeah. My jam was always Pitfall and River Raid. Love Pitfall and River Raid.
Pitfall is good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Atari 2600. I'm really trying to remember if I had it when I was that young. 9 years old. when it came out.
I don't feel like I did.
At six?
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have been six.
Right. So I think a lot of my, the technology that I had gotten had, it would have been like after 11 years old, I think.
Yeah.
Hopefully my mom doesn't listen, but what my sister equated to as guilt payments, because what would happen is my mom, my dad passed away when I was 11 years old, and my mom, as a result, had to work a lot of like extra jobs in order to support the family. But she would give us anything we wanted, and this being the Atari or being the Apple II. That was what kind of filled our days, is playing with this technology. But she wanted to provide to us and give to us. And that's why I ended up with stuff like that. So I definitely, appreciate the efforts of her, especially, since we're on Mother's Day that we're recording this, to make sure that I had those kind of things. The Atari, many, many hours of just wasted time, but fun wasted time. I think I'd even mentioned it before where with the Pitfall one, you had the, if Activision had the thing going on where if you had a certain score, you would take a picture of the screen, you send it in to them, and they would send you a badge. And somewhere in my basement in my archives, I've still got the Harry Explorer badge, for Pitfall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like my pride of the 1980s is that stupid little badge. the achievement medal, that you would normally get, like if you were to play Xbox nowadays, is, you would have to, play a game and do a certain quest or something like that to unlock an achievement. But back in our day, we had those badges that we would send in for.
Hmm.
But I don't think you ever did anything like that, did you? I don't think you've ever mentioned that. Yeah.
I never really tried to do that. I don't remember it being like a thing.
Okay.
Like I might not have even known that you could do that.
Okay.
So, sorry, I've got the worst tickle tonight in my throat.
Okay.
I keep mute my microphone.
All right, well, I won't hold it against you. Did you remember anything about the Sword Quest games?
I don't.
Okay. and a lot of my...
were mentioned a lot in Ready Player One.
Yeah, in the book it was mentioned, right. And that was around them having the actual contest where you had like a high score and you would submit your score to them and you would win actual legit prizes. And they had like three different games that, with different levels, but by the time they never got to like the final level, mm-hmm. of the Sword Quest because I guess the company went defunct or something like that. So there's so many great things like that was going on in the Atari days and, these games that were going on and these wonderful contests and these badges. So to me, that was just, so awesome that, it started back in 77, but I don't remember it being huge in my radar until like the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's kind of the way I feel too. So
right.
I get it.
And then Apple II was released.
Oh man, that's impactful right there.
Yeah.
And we didn't really start with Apple II. We didn't get into it until Apple IIe, like you did. You had the Apple IIe, right?
Yeah, I had the IIe.
And that was, I think, 81.
Ooh,
or something.
I have to look that one up.
80? 81. I'm going to say 81. Because I think...
Apple IIe computer.
Release
January 1983.
Three, okay. Yeah, I was closer to high school. I thought I was. Yeah, I was in high school then, like freshman high school in January 83. Oh my God. I was trying to remember. Listen to this,
everybody. 1.02 megahertz, 6502 processor. Oh, dear God. What else here that we have?
Someday be able to fit a computer into a room.
They had 64K RAM. allowed up to 128K, by the way. Let's see what else we had.
Look out.
Yeah. Oof. Yada, yada, yada. ROM chip, blah, blah, blah. Pro DOS.
Mm-hmm.
40-column screen.
Disk operating system, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. Anyway, not to get too geeky on the technology part, but...
So here's a question.
Okay.
How many Apple IIe's, or just Apple II, we'll talk, keep the 77 thing going. How many Apple IIs could fit into an Apple Watch now?
Oh, you mean like the processing power?
Yes. Think about that. Think about the size of the watch versus the size of the computers that we had.
Yeah. So you actually have that answer in front of you?
Nope. I'm just throwing it out.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what the processing speed of Apple Watch is, or the memory capacity.
Right. It'd be good to have that answer, but yeah, I would just be guessing, and I have no.
Okay, you have the processor of the Apple IIe up in front of you. Is that what you were reading?
Yeah.
Okay. Processor.
Oh, the Apple IIe.
Speed of the Apple Watch. There's got to be one, right? It's got to have a processor in it.
Oh, yeah. The Apple IIe is arguably the most successful computer Apple has ever produced. IIe was introduced in January 1983, wow. Originally selling for $1,395. And included the same 1.02 megahertz 6502 processor as the Apple One and Two. Let's see. The Apple IIe included the new Pro DOS operating system designed for the ill-fated Apple III's SOS and AppleSoft Basic burned into the 32K ROM. The Apple IIe also allowed upper and lowercase letters be used, allowing full functionality of the shift and caps lock keys.
My gosh. Slow down, man. Slow down. I don't know if my brain can process that.
Yeah. The main goal of the IIe was succeed where the Apple III had failed, create a professional computer for use in business. It served its purpose well and also became abundant in schools and homes.
Oh, where did it go? There it is. No, that's not it.
Listen to this. So, yeah. 560 by 192 black and white, 140 by 192, and 16 colors. You had 16 whopping colors on the Apple IIe.
Huh, 16.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh, mine only had one. It was green.
No, I thought we talked about Ultima 2.
Mine was green.
Oh, you didn't have the color. Okay.
No. Nope.
Mine had color.
Mine was completely green.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I remember the water being blue.
Yeah, I did not have blue water.
Okay.
It was black.
All right. Well, that would be helpful for you. You know, I guess in games like Zork. Then it didn't make any, big difference, because that was a text-based game.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I remember rocking the color monitor.
Okay, here, we can do some math. I couldn't find the Apple watch information.
Specs. This is Sunday evening. I don't do math.
Okay. So the app the iPhone X specs, the main processor frequency, what was the Apple? 1.02?
Yeah, 1.02 megahertz.
Megahertz.
Yes.
The main processor for the iPhone X is 2.39 gigahertz.
Okay. So how many is it? Does it go meg to gig?
A thousand megabytes a gig.
Yeah, 1024 megabytes goes into a gigabyte. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Shit, you're going to make me think about this, aren't you? Crap.
Huh?
All right, calc.
You said 64K of RAM, right?
Yes.
64K.
64K of RAM.
Get this, dude. The RAM on the iPhone X is 3 gig.
Okay. So let's stick with the RAM. So 64 times... Oh, I don't even know how to do this now. So 1024.
Are we going to lose listeners at this point?
I think we are. I think we're going way off the deep end, man, dude. This is crazy.
People are just shutting, skipping to the next podcast right about now.
Yeah, screw this. You're right.
It's a lot,
yeah.
You could fit 1,000 Apple IIs inside of a iPhone X.
I would argue it'd be more than that, but okay.
You're right, it probably would be.
Yeah.
Couple thousand, several thousand. Anyway, it's fun to think about that kind of stuff to me. I like that.
But yeah, it's great that technology was so prevalent in both of our lives, so.
Oh, yeah.
As I know that a lot of other people were, because I know that even if you didn't have an Apple at home, you probably interacted with one at school. Because, I mean, every school system seemed to have an Apple or a Mac that I remember. I mean, I remember our library had, like, at least a dozen Macs, that was kind of available there, for students to interact with. And I remember... there being things like, where in the world is Carmen San Diego, the Oregon Trail. I remember crap like that, being able to play that at school. So that was awesome. It was an awesome time for me, and to have those memories of having those games to play with, interact with. And, in a lot of ways, it's probably even the start of my IT career, besides obviously watching the movie War Games, was having the technology to play with, and that being the Apple II computers and how accessible they were in the school and at home.
Right.
Let's see. So what else do we have going on? Saturday Night Fever premieres. We already talked about movies.
Awesome movie.
Yeah.
I always love that movie. I don't know. You want to talk about TV or music, or do you want to stick with more? Because I really don't have too much on headlines.
What do we have for TV?
TV. I did the Wikipedia lookup, and it says series on air, not necessarily what was premiered. So okay. I like to go with that, not necessarily what started in 77.
Sure.
What was on 77 and popular? Something that stuck out in my mind is $6 Million Man was on. Happy Days was on. Yeah.
Yeah. Here I am running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And jumping. That was the up and the down part.
So it says $6 Million Man. Did you say Laverne and Shirley too?
I did not get to that one yet.
Okay, all right.
Family Feud, which Chrissy and I have been watching reruns of the 1980 year of Family Feud, which is funny, with Richard Dawson, is great stuff. Let's see, that was all – those were just ABC movies that we just – or ABC shows. CBS was – they mostly list, like, the soap operas. Carol Burnett show.
Oh my god, that was awesome.
Love that show. All in the Family.
I love how they like interacted with each other, and was it Corman and
Tim Conway.
Tim Conway. My god, just the way they would crack each other up.
Harvey Corman and Tim Conway were like two of the funniest guys that could work together.
Yeah. And Carol Burnett Tim too. Conway.
Oh yeah, no. They were, the whole cast was great. Vicky
We know this.
Vicky. The Vicky chick. That chick named Vicky. That looked a lot like Carol Burnett and had similar comedy style. Anyway,
Vicky Lawrence.
Thank you.
Yep.
The Waltons was on.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, John Boy. One Day at a Time was on.
Okay.
Valerie Bertinelli.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, no, Schneider.
Schneider, Schroeder. Why did I say Schroeder? Schneider, yeah.
Which is funny. Schroeder's from Peanuts.
No.
Schneider is just recently popped into my head, like in the last few weeks. I'm like, you know what I want to be for Halloween? I want to be Schneider. I'm going to get the bell-bottom blue jeans and the big-ass keychain. With the, you know, the 70s style belt that has all the holes that go, like two holes that go all the way around.
Yeah.
The white plain t-shirt with like the brown or jean vest, or might have been a brown vest. I think it was a jean vest.
It was a jean vest.
Yeah. And get like, I'd have to get a wig because I don't have any hair anymore, and then just grow out my mustache a little bit. If I had, you know, if I wanted to.
Didn't he have like a pencil, like a pencil thin mustache?
Yeah, he had kind of a thin mustache. It wasn't real thick, but I don't have one at all right now. So it would just take, it'll take a, you know, a week or two or whatever. I might have to dye it black though, cause I'm getting pretty gray in the face. Anyway, I would love to be Schneider. I would love to go to a Halloween party. And see how many people actually catch it, you know, get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the tool belt now with your job, right?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you'd be able to pull that off. Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking at a picture of him now. He's got, like, the tattoo, the rolled up, like, cigarettes and his white
cigarettes in the sleeve,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
Cigarette pack in the sleeves, man. Yeah. It was great.
That was 77, definitely.
Yeah. Maybe for the 70s party, that's what I would do, is dress like that. Freaking classic.
So what are the shows we got in 77?
I'm a little odd sometimes, okay. We have Land of the Lost.
Sid Meiercroft, yep.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff right there.
Yep.
Saturday Night Live, which I was reading earlier, that this was the first year that it started in 1975. It was the first year that Bill Murray was on.
Wow. Okay.
He replaced Chevy Chase in 1977. That interesting Saturday Night Live trivia.
Did Bill do like the Weekend Update like Chevy did?
No.
Okay.
No. I know Jane Curtin was still part of that.
Right.
Love Jane Curtin. She's hysterical. I can't remember who else took over for that. Anyway, more shows. Little House on the Prairie.
Guilty pleasure. I used to watch it.
Yep. Me too. Quincy. That was a good one.
Back then, I didn't really get into it. I don't know if I would now.
What was it? Jack Klugman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just always remember the opening of the show. I think my grandparents watched it a lot. I remember the opening of the show. You know, he was a medical examiner. That's Quincy M.E.
Right.
And he would do like autopsy. I remember the opening of the show, there was always this scene where, he's like opening, he's getting into surgery and he's got like a bunch of students around the table. And like two or three of them drop down passing out or something. Either one of them or a couple of them drop out, pass out. I don't know why that sticks in my head. It's weird. The funniest, so weird how certain things just always stick with you.
Yeah, I don't think
like Quincy, that little detail.
Yeah, I don't think Quincy hit like my mom's radar, so therefore it wouldn't hit mine or my dad's. You know, because it's like one of those things where, you know, if the parents had control of the TV, then that's what you were watching. And I know that, you know, MASH and Barney Miller and Hogan's Heroes, I remember that because, you know, those are shows they watched. But I don't remember Quincy being on their radar. Therefore, it wasn't on mine.
I think my grandparents watched it quite a bit.
Okay.
Anyway.
If we're talking grandparents, then I would go Lawrence Welk. But, okay.
That was on the TV. That was also a program that they would watch. Got to watch their programs.
Tiny Bubbles.
Here we go. This is, I think, for the running shows, that's, I'm going to wrap that one up for the running shows, but I'm going to look at the list of debuting shows here in a second, too.
Okay.
Running shows, this will be your favorite. The Muppet Show.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. It was the second year that it was on. So it started in 1976, ran to 81.
Yeah, that was definitely my jam. If I was controlling controlling the TV, that was it. Just the guest stars that would be on that, and you know the rom-com that was going on between Miss Piggy and Kermit. Oh, God, yeah, it's the sexual tension was amazing. But no, I was actually Team Fozzie, and the Swedish Chef.
I like Beaker.
Yeah. Beaker was awesome stuff.
Okay. I want to say there was
Dr. Hudson or Dr. Bunsen Honeydew.
Yeah. Okay, why am I not seeing this one show that I thought would have been on at this point, at this time, but I'm not. Oh, Wonder Woman. That was another existing show.
Linda,
that was great.
Linda Carter, yeah.
Okay, I'm looking for one more, and I'm not seeing it. Okay, maybe I was wrong. Maybe it wasn't out yet. Excuse me. So, debuting shows. I will run through those real quick.
Okay.
A couple of them. Three's Company.
I remember watching episodes, but I don't remember being that impressed with it. I don't know why. It just never really it never really was a big deal for me.
Mm-hmm.
I can never explain why. I don't know. So Three's Company, was that something you were into?
Oh, loved it.
Oh.
Yeah, we watched.
Okay.
I didn't get most of it at that age, but I remember watching it in reruns, I think, probably mostly.
Sure.
Here's another good one. Chips.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Definitely a big fan of Chips. John Baker, I definitely related to him in a lot of ways, and I thought it was awesome that I got a chance to talk to Larry Wilcox back in my early podcasting days. But I used to love that show. And just the theme, you know, God, I don't even, can't even think of how it goes right now, but it's like, I loved that show. You know, and Poncherello being the slob, Larry Wilcox being the straight guy, and it was just cheesy. It was good, cheesy 70s, you know, bromance comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was hoping that I would find another show on this whole list too, and that was Emergency, but I don't see it here anymore. So I don't know if that came out in 78, maybe. Squad 51. You know, do you remember that one?
Didn't watch it.
Okay. Anyway. So, and this is, here's the one that I was looking for in the previous, in the ones that were existing. I was wrong. It started in 1977. So this is debut. September 24th. Now, what were you saying about Chips? Loved it, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's take love to a whole new level. Let's take it on the seas.
The Love Boat.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, my God. Come on, think of the words, Dave.
What? Exciting and new?
Yeah, there you go. Exciting and new.
Exciting and new. Come aboard.
We're expecting you. Yeah. Yep. Okay. And Isaac was a pimp, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the doc. Gopher, and the
Gopher
doctor
was a little weasel.
Yeah.
And Doc was a whore.
Yeah.
It was a man whore.
It was so interesting because, you know, I recently went on a cruise, and I kind of see the evolution of how the, you know, the episode, everybody's kind of like, yay, we're going on a cruise, everything's all great, and then you have some sort of drama that happens, and then it gets all wrapped up at the end, and everybody kind of forgives each other and loves each other. And, yeah, you know, there's like that same evolution even with shorter cruises, you know, nowadays. Because you have, you know, I don't know, just something happens where you're kind of like interacting with each other 24/7 and you don't have a break. And I'm not saying this, you know, anything bad against family or anything like that, but it's just like you have all these other people that are on a ship that you're dealing with, and it's just, it creates some sort of level of stress, and you probably kind of dump on your family. And so I kind of see how this show highlighted that, but they took it, you know, at a fun level because you had all your, the guest stars that would come in each week, and you'd have all of these predominant movie stars and TV stars that were kind of like a revolving door of great cast members. And they're the ones that experience the drama. And then you had the, you know, the regular cast, you know, the Vicky and the Julie, you know, that were, you know, the Captain Stewmings of the world that, you know, were your main person. But everyone else kind of had that drama that they had to go through, you know, but the crew had to kind of be the stabilizing force behind it. And, I got to see that, you know, recently, where, you know, these people are always have to stay positive, and they always have to have that, you know, the interaction with the guests, and whether they're, you know, it's a good experience or a bad experience, they've got to kind of turn it into a positive. And so even nowadays, you know, 2019, that I can still see how a show like that could exist. And I'm kind of surprised that it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think they could bring it back the same. They wouldn't have the same potency.
So, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I can see how it played, though.
So, quick story about what you're saying about their hospitality, right?
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, they're always, like, very hospitable. When we went on our cruise last year, there was this one host of, I don't know, it was like, one of the bingo show games or something, or one of the games nights that we were at one of the, you know, in one of the rooms. And she kept saying that it was her last night or last cruise. Like, she's quitting, you know, she's done with cruises. And she made it real obvious that she really didn't give a shit that she was leaving cruise business. Like, she, and like, we all walked out midway through. We're like, wow, that was really uncomfortable.
Wow.
Like, her hospitality was out the window. She didn't give a damn about anything. So she kept reiterating that, yeah, this is my last cruise.
Wow.
She was all happy about it. It was really bizarre. We all, when we left, we're like, that was really just really weird. What was that all about? What's her problem? Side story. Anyway, let's get back to the other thing. So I was scrolling down a little bit while you were talking about the hospitality.
Hospitality. Yeah.
And I saw the next section is called Ending in 1977, and that's where I found my emergency show.
Okay.
It ended in 1977. And another great show ended in 1977, The Electric Company.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Sanford and Son ended in 77.
Bum, bum, so, bum, bum, bum,
I feel like I drive that truck all the time. I always have so much crap in the back of my truck because of tools, and you know, we're picking up the leftover stuff that we have at the job when we're leaving a job. I always end up with it all in my truck, and I don't understand why I do that. This is I like this Wikipedia page because it really breaks it down into these different categories, like what network things were on, and then, you know, what started and what ended. And then down at the bottom, it has this, section of births of actors for TV.
I'm afraid to ask, but go ahead.
Screech was born in 77.
Do we really need to give this guy any time?
From Saved by the Bell, Dustin Diamond.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We don't have to give this guy any time. Come on.
Amber Benson from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I don't know if I know who that is. I think I know who that is. Let's see. I don't see too many others that I recognize. Parks and Recreation. Somebody from there. Young and the Restless. Mad TV. I love Mad TV. I miss that show.
Those are the shows that ended in 77.
No, these are actors that were born on these shows that are on now. Not seeing anything else. Dustin Diamond was the first one that jumped out at me because he's only his birthday's 4 days away from mine.
Are you a Dustin Diamond fan? Admit it.
No, I never really got into Saved by the Bell. Watched it, you know, because I was a little older for it. It came out a little too later in my life. I was a little too mature for it. But I will say, at one point, he got in the boxing ring with Danny Bonaducci.
I like Danny.
I love Danny Bonaducci.
Yeah.
He's hysterical. But somehow this boxing match happened back when I was living, you know, up by you guys. And it was on, remember the radio lineup of, like Stephen Gary, then Johnny B and Kevin Matthews and Danny. They were all on the same station. I think it was CKG. And
just for the listener's sake, that's in Chicago.
That's in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yes, WCKG, Chicago. Anyway, so somehow he had Screech on his show, Dustin Diamond, and they threw down in a boxing ring. Like, they actually trained for it and stuff. It was a huge thing. I don't know if you remember that. Do you?
I don't.
You might have been in the service at that point.
Okay.
Before, yeah, it was.
Who
it was
won? Night. It had to be Danny.
I think it went three rounds and it was a draw.
Okay. I would have, if I was a betting man, I would have put my money on Danny.
Yeah.
Danny looks like a scrapper.
Well, and then he got like really into steroids
yeah.
and stuff. And,
yeah,
like,
he
totally
was into roids. Yeah.
Yeah. He got a little weird after a while. Anyway. Let's see if there's anybody else. Who's Jenna Van Oy? Van Oy from Blossom.
You got me on that one.
Wow, there's a lot of people born in 77 that are actors. I don't recognize any of them, though, other than the first one. So,
all right, so let's talk politics.
Wait.
I got to wait.
Hold on.
I know. Okay.
Oh, it was a neighbor. Never mind.
Okay.
Small Wonder. I thought it was the girl from Small Wonder, but it's not.
So Jimmy Carter took over as president in 77.
Mm-hmm.
What's your memories of Jimmy Carter?
I remember him being a very mild-mannered style of president.
Yeah.
Almost too mild-mannered to where he was really quiet. Not until many, many years later, I saw an interview with him and he continued his work after he lost to Reagan. That was 80, right?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Or was it 80? Reagan got it first time around. Ford. No, Ford was in there somewhere too. So it was Ford and then Reagan. So Carter, I just remember him being so quiet, but then years and years, like 25 years later, I saw some kind of, maybe 30 years, I saw an interview with him and I really liked what he was talking about, and that he has made so much of a difference in the world of politics after he was president that you just don't know about. Like it's kept so quiet, but I was like really impressed with what he's done over his life. So,
I think he
might not have been ready because he had to take over from vice president. Maybe he just wasn't, you know.
I mean, he was involved in like Habitats of Humanity afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. So I remember that being a big deal. And Jimmy had kind of always been there and contributing in some way to making life better. But I remember back in the 70s, all I remembered him as the peanut president.
Peanut president?
Yeah.
And wasn't his brother like, didn't he have like Billy Beer or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Billy Beer. That's Billy right. Carter, yeah, Billy yeah, Beer. Yeah, yeah. That's right. I forgot about that.
See, weird shit like that sticks in my head. God. All right. Wow, we talked about a lot of stuff so far. And we haven't even touched on music.
All right, so
you want to jump over to music?
Yeah, what do we have for music? Do you have that up?
I do, actually.
I have The Clash released their first album.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Not a big fan. Don't really care.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't really care. Yeah. Clash never did it for me. I don't understand why they're considered punk. I don't understand that term, really.
All right. I think we lost listeners on that one.
Yeah. No, I really don't. I don't get it. Like, they just sound like kind of rock to me. Punk is elusive to me. I don't understand it completely.
Okay.
I'm a metalhead, but, you know, and they kind of go hand in hand.
The stuff that was like their main release songs, you know, that's what, you know, that was on the radio. I remember that.
Should
stuff.
I Stay or Should I Go?
Yeah.
Rock Casbah.
Right. So I appreciated that stuff, but no, I didn't have like a Clash album. I wasn't that guy.
Yeah. Well, the number one on the list is Rumors from Fleetwood Mac. Great freaking album. Just amazing.
Okay.
So many good songs on it. Then there are some that I was looking at quickly. Oh, Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. We mentioned Meatloaf a couple in the last few episodes, actually. I think his name has come up.
Yeah.
Like the,
that was actually, Fight Club, yeah, that was, Fight Club, yeah, that was, yeah, Fight Club. Mm-hmm. I would do anything for that.
I would do anything for that.
Anything for love, but I won't do that.
Right. My all-time favorite Pink Floyd album, Animals, was released in 77. I can listen like the Desert album, Desert Island albums, Animals is it for me.
So.
For sure. Really, it's like one of my all time favorite albums of anybody. It's probably in my top three.
So you know, I'm now of the thing where I've got a Google device, you know, right there in the kitchen, and I'm always telling it to like shuffle whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and my favorite phrase, you know, as I've said before, is, you know, hey Google, shuffle All Out 80s on Spotify. And you know, then I just have a constant going on of great 80s songs. So if I were to listen from end to end for the album, would this be one that I should listen to from track one all the way to the end, or does it matter? Does it need to be in sequence?
This one is a story.
Okay.
So it would be helpful. And it's one that is, it's got a lot of depth to it. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Pink Floyd with somebody, but I can't get anybody to join me to talk about them. And I can't just talk about it myself.
Sure you can.
This, yeah, I do monopolize conversations quite a bit. So
No, I'm just saying you can do a solo show.
I don't feel comfortable doing it. I've done a couple of them and I don't feel like I can talk to myself like that. I don't know.
All right, listener, if you want to hear Scott do a solo Pink Floyd show, please send a email to McFly@BonsaiRetroClub.com.
Okay. All
right.
So Animals is about different classes of workers, okay?
Okay.
You have the CEOs and bosses. And then you have like those are like the dogs. Okay. That's what they're considered, the dogs. Then there's the sheep, which are just kind of the blue collar and the ones that just kind of do whatever. And then there's the pigs those are the owners of the companies, not necessarily the managers. Like the dogs are the managers and bosses where they'll stab each other in the back for anything. But the owners of the companies are like the pigs. That's how I kind of get it. But it's talking about England, post World War II, basically.
Okay.
And the economic structure and the business structure within, Great Britain or England's, situation of how bad things got for a while there after the war. Picking up the pieces and whatnot. But it's really an interesting album, but I just love the instrumental portions of it. It's only got five songs on it. Okay.
Okay.
The first two songs are only a minute and a half long and they're bumpers. Okay. They're the introduction and the wrap up.
Okay.
And they're both called Pigs on the Wing, part one and part two. I think that's what it is. I can't remember the name of the second one. Anyway, so then it goes dog, sheep, pigs.
All right.
Yeah,
so
dogs, sheep. So, and dogs is 17 minutes long because it's a lot of instrumental stuff.
Hmm.
And they're just Pink Floyd in general blows my mind instrumentally. They're just really, really good.
All right. Well, maybe that's the next time I'm like in the kitchen and I'm just going to be there for a little bit, maybe I'll have that album play and see what it's like.
Okay. Running on Empty, Jackson Browne came out.
Okay.
Let's see.
You're looking at albums now, right?
I am looking at albums, not songs, not individual songs. We'd be here all night.
Yeah, I'm looking at...
Let There Be Rock by AC/DC, great one. In Color, Cheap Trick.
Billboard Hot 100 I have up right now.
I think that's what I have.
Margaritaville.
Really? I didn't see that one.
Yeah, this is the songs, not the albums.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Margaritaville, Jimmy Buffett. That was number 14.
Hmm.
No,
yeah, there's a...
Number one, though, I'm not a Rod Stewart fan. I don't know what it is about the guy's voice, and there might be two songs that I like from him.
What two songs?
It was one that was in the Legal Eagles or the one that crap. Was that the name of the movie, Legal Eagles?
I with Robert Redford?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Damn, see another
1986.
Where did I pull that one out of? Seriously.
Soundtrack, Rod Stewart. That was Love Touch.
Oh, yeah. No, there's only one song that I like by Rod Stewart.
Only one? Which one?
Mm-hmm. Young Turks.
Okay. So the one that in 77 was Tonight's the Night. Gonna Be All Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. I don't see the attraction towards him. And I know a lot of people feel differently. But yeah, I don't know what it is. I just can't get into the guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple songs that I can kind of tolerate, but Young Turks I like because it's got one lyric in there that just is so powerful. And I won't be able to recite it right now. Because I can tell you that Robert Redford was in Legal Eagles that I've never seen, but I can't pull up this one lyric. Hold on, I gotta look it up.
Hotel California, the Eagles very proud. Was in 77.
Oh, that's a good one.
Dancing Queen, ABBA.
Nice. Songs, you're talking
I'm
about.
I'm talking about songs. I'm on songs. The ones that are like, you know, are big for me is what I'm picking on or mentioning.
Here's the line. This is what really blows my mind every time I hear it. It says, because life is so brief and time is a thief when you're undecided. And like a fistful of sand, it can slip right through your hands.
That's kind of deep.
That's kind of deep, yeah.
Yeah. So that's stuck with you all these years.
I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah. All the other stuff, I really don't. All of his other songs are all right. Do you think I'm sexy? I remember that song being out when I was like in seventh grade, so that would have probably been about 78, 79.
Right.
I remember it being popular right along with Queen. We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions.
Night Moves, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band was in 77.
It's a great song.
It is. New Kid in Town, the Eagles.
Love it. Was that off of, what album was that from?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the individual songs. Oh, you're going to love this. Number 71 was the Star Wars theme Cantina Band from Miko.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God. Bay City Rollers made the list.
Really?
You made me believe in magic. I'm not familiar with that one. I just remember the Saturday Night from the Bay City Rollers.
S-A-T-U-R. Yep. D-A-Y. Night.
My sister had a whole bunch of Bay City Roller albums.
Okay, why can't I find any Eagles on this list? That's weird. Maybe it came out before. Maybe it came out in 77.
Actually, number 99 was a main title Star Wars sequence from the London Symphony Orchestra.
Really?
Yeah. Man, Star Wars really had its foothold, didn't it?
What about the disco version of that?
There was a disco version of the main theme?
Oh, yeah.
Who released that?
Oh, dude. Dude, you've got to find a version of that and like bust that out. I'm not
main
kidding.
Main theme disco.
Yeah. Oh, it's great, man.
Remembering Michael's bizarre Star Wars number one disco hit.
Mako?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's something special. You got to find it and listen to it.
No, I actually got it right here on YouTube.
Maybe even drop it in right here. Just for fun.
When was that, like, released? Like, what year?
It probably came out in 78.
I don't see anything. Oh, that's weird. I've got to listen to that though. I wonder if I've had it. I don't remember hearing it and I had heard it.
It's awesome, dude. It's awesome. They throw in a little R2-D2 sounds in there every once in a while.
Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk is a disco album by, was it Miko or Mako? Released in 1977.
Okay.
So it's actually fitting for this show.
It works.
Yeah.
You gotta try it. You gotta check it. It's great. I've heard it on the 70s channel on satellite radio, like several times, and I even had it saved. Like I had one of my devices for satellite radio used to be able to save certain songs.
Right.
You'd record it and keep it on the memory. I don't have that device anymore, and so you couldn't rip them from the device to your computer or anything like that. It just wasn't
feasible. I've got it up on this tab. I'm not going to close this tab. I'm going to listen to that once we get done talking.
Okay. Please do. Please do. And give it a full listen.
Oh, so, okay. So
it's like 6 minutes long. It might be 5 or 6 minutes long.
No, it's like 3.5.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. I thought it was longer than that, but that's fine. That's what she said.
That's what she said. All right, so music. What else we got?
That's about it. That's about all I really need to talk about.
Okay. So we've talked.
I think I pushed animals enough.
you did spend some time on that, and yeah. I probably spent quite a considerable time on the Atari. So I think we're good.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so this is the point of the episode where we remind everybody that we have a website out there. It's BonsaiRetroClub.com. That's Banzai. So please go out there and follow us on our social media endeavors, that being Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. We're not doing too much on, but please go out there and do some likes, some follows, all that kind of good jazz. We'd appreciate it. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can also do that through our website. So please do that and shoot us an email. And once again, as I mentioned earlier, if you do want Scott to do that solo episode of, his favorite Rod Stewart songs, please go ahead and send that over to McFly@BonsaiRetroClub.com.
That'd be a very short podcast. One song.
Yep. We appreciate everybody joining the club, and we want to remind everybody, be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye.
Take care.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
Bonsai!